Welcome to Whitley on Wine. I'm your host, Robert Whitley, and joining me today is my co-host,
Lisa Redwine from the Shores Restaurant in La Jolla,
sommelier and general manager at the Shores. And you know, we've had trouble making connections for a while because I was out of the country traveling, and I've been back, and you haven't been available. And so it's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
So, how are things at the Shores?
It's really good.
Things you selling are a lot of good wine.
Yeah, you know, we are selling lots of fun wine. I'm really excited this week. We're switching over our wine list format finally, and then kind of moving more to a globally inspired wine program over there, which is really exciting. I know Rioja is a great topic today because we're talking about Spain this week in our restaurant and really looking at wines from other areas of the world other than California.
Yeah.
So,
and speaking of Rioja, I just got back from a trip to Spain. I was away for a couple of weeks, and I spent 5 or 6 days up in the Rioja region. And, you know, I've been there many times before, but this was a very enlightening trip because there's definitely something going on there. There's the old Rioja, and there's the new Rioja. And this is something that we've seen in other, you know, historic wine regions of the world. In Piemonte, for example, you know, the, sort of a modern style of Barolo and an old-fashioned style of Barolo. In the Montalcino district, you know, a modern style of Brunello and, you know, a more traditional style of Brunello. And we're seeing that in Rioja now, too. There are a number of wineries that are making wines that kind of go, they're still DOC wines, they're DOC Rioja, but they go outside the rules a little bit. They're making what they call these high expression wines.
Now, are these wineries that are long established, or are you seeing a new generation of wineries that are being established today that are making these styles?
You know, there's a mix. Mm-hmm. There's a mix. One of the wineries that impressed me was called Riojanas, and Riojanas is over 120 years old, and they are straddling the fence. They're one of the few that I saw that was really straddling the fence and doing it well. They have a lineup of your traditional Riojas that are aged the proper amount of time in the barrels. So they have the traditional Crianza, the Reserva, and the Gran Reserva.
Right.
Okay. And they also have a modern lineup of wines that are made with a little more ripe fruit.
Mm-hmm.
They're not aged as long. They have much more new French oak.
How are they separating the two lines? Is it a different
name?
They
have a different name. Different name. I mean, it's all Riojanas, but they have a different name. And then you have wineries like, for example, Rota. Uh-huh. Which is relatively new. I mean, Rota's probably less than 10 years old. It's hard to really get a fix on when Rota started because the people who own Rota have very, very high standards. And they made several vintages before they ever sold a wine because it wasn't good enough for them.
Oh, okay.
So they kept working on it and working on it. So I think it was something like 3 or 4 vintages they did before they came out with their very first Rota. And so Rota has 3 wines. They have Rota, Rota 1, and Sercion. And Sercion is more like their, you know, Meritage or Bordeaux blend. And where Rota and Rota 1 are your, you know, it's not traditional Rioja. They're both Reservas, but they're made in a modern style with, you know, small French oak barrels and more ripeness to the fruit, you know, and slightly higher alcohol levels, although nothing like what we see here in California with 15% and 16% alcohols. So they're getting up into the 14% range and 14.5%, whereas for years and years and years, generations, Rioja was always around 12.5% to 13.5%. So it's just, you know, these are subtle little changes, but they make a huge difference in the wine. And then you have an old winery like Muga. Aro, which has been around forever, but Muga makes a very modern Rioja and was really one of the first to start using modern techniques and using smaller barrels and really going for more extraction and ripeness in their fruit. But the interesting thing is that despite the fact that we have these new types of Rioja, and before I go any further, the one that really impressed me the most was a winery called Artadi. And Artadi is relatively new, and the Artadi wines are absolutely spectacular. And they don't adhere to the Crianza Reserve or Grand Reserve. They just make Rioja is what they call it. But it's they are the very definition of what is being called high expression Rioja wine.
Okay.
So they're very good. But anyway, what I was about to say is, despite the fact that there is this movement toward more modern styles of Rioja, some of the traditional producers are fabulous as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so it's just because you haven't embraced the modern twist of Rioja, it doesn't mean you're not making great wines.
So you're saying it's really not diluting the true expression of Rioja.
It's different. You know, the more traditional Rioja does spend a little more time in wood. They tend to be bigger wooden barrels. Uh-huh. It spends a little more time in wood, so the color of the wine's different. It's not going to be as dark because uh-huh. with age, you know, red wines right. begin to lose their pigmentation. You'll get more earthy nuances. Now, you don't get the bright, ripe primary fruit. You still have a lot of primary fruit, but you have more mature aromas. You have more earthy aromas and spice,
right.
things like that. So it was an education, because even though I taste these wines all the time, you know, and we know the two ubiquitous Rioja bodegas
right,
are
right.
Riscal and Caceres. And they've been around forever. And, you know, those guys still do a good job. I happen to prefer Riscal to Caceres. Uh-huh. And I'm going to try on my vacation this year to spend a little bit of time at the Riscal built a Starwood Hotel, a spa and resort just outside of Logroño. Logroño is the capital of Rioja. So 4 or 5 miles outside of town, they have this beautiful hotel and very nice restaurant on the premises, so I'm going to try to run in there. But I think Riscal's done a pretty good job. Caceres, I'm not going to say they're not doing a good job, but I don't think that they've really kept pace with all of the changes that are going on in Rioja at the moment.
Well, and funny enough, you know, Caceres is really one that has an identity for Spanish wines. You know, mm-hmm. it's a very recognizable label. Even if you can't pronounce it, you still, when you see the label.
Yeah, and they were the first in the market. Uh-huh. You know, Caceres and Riscal have been around a long time. You know, Spanish wines have not been popular in the same vein that, say, for example, French and Italian wines are
right.
popular, or even Australian wines are popular. But they're really starting to make a push. You know, the Spanish wine industry didn't look outside the country.
Right.
It was really an inward-looking industry for a long, long time, and it was only a handful of companies that really, you know, looked at the world market. Mm-hmm. And that began to change, I would say, you know, somewhere between 8 and 12 years ago, mm-hmm. depending on the region.
Well, like, you know, importers are starting to bring those wines to us. And
Priorat.
Like,
Priorat is
absolutely.
Big now.
And Toro.
Galicia uh-huh. with the Albariño
oh,
has
absolutely.
Been. But, you know, if you go back 20 years, you wouldn't find you wouldn't find an Albariño anywhere.
No.
In fact, most people, including a lot of people who know a fair amount about wine, would not have even known what Albariño was.
No. When you look at places
So it's
like,
all recent.
Well, in Rueda, it's a very exciting country to study, really, because it's really, you know, in the wine world, it's very seldom where we see the emergence of a wine kind of superpower mm. and seeing all the different styles that are coming aboard.
Yeah.
You know, France, I mean, they've you know, there isn't that excitement that Spain can bring in the wine industry.
You know, I mentioned a few of the names of some of the people doing the more modern Rioja, but I do want to give the more traditional producers their due. And as I said, Caceres and Riscal are doing a fine job. If I had to choose between one or the other, I would probably go with a Riscal over a Caceres. But the producers, the old line producers that really caught my eye while I was there were Cune.
Okay.
Cune is one. Cune is still doing a fabulous job. Their wines age remarkably well. I mean, you can have a Cune that's 20, 30 years old, and it's just beautiful. And the flagship wine for Cune is the Cune Imperial Reserva.
Oh, okay.
And Imperial Grand Reserva. Those two, the Reserva and Grand Reserva, are their top of the line. And those wines are just incredible. And, you know, they're not inexpensive, but they're not expensive like Bordeaux is expensive.
Well, I was
going
to say,
Burgundy
right.
is expensive. So, you know, I really like Cune. And then another winery that that impressed me, and it was kind of a revelation. You know, I'm familiar with Kune. I've had the Kune wines down through the years, and my expectation was that it was going to be good, and it was good. But I had very little experience with Lopez Heredia, and this is a 132-year-old winery in Haro.
Okay.
Haro, spelling it H-A-R-O, but it's pronounced
Haro.
Haro. It's 132 years old. It's been in the same family the whole time. And Mercedes Lopez Heredia, the great-great-granddaughter of the founder, is the winemaker. And we had a really fascinating visit. She is proud of the traditional style of Rioja, and they've always done it very, very well. And what Lopez Heredia is known for is the ageability of its wines.
Okay.
So going through the cellar, she plucked out an old bottle of white wine, and it had mold all over it. It didn't even have a label. You know, it's out of a bin. So
right.
they don't label the bottles until they're ready to sell them.
Right.
So she picks out this white wine, and it's a 1970. And then she picks out a red wine, and that's their, you know, Lopez Heredia's top-of-the-line wine, red wine, and that's 1976. So I'm expecting the 70 white is not going to be very interesting.
And it was probably what, Viera?
Viera and possibly a little Verdejo.
Verdejo?
You know?
Okay.
And then there are a couple of other minor
There's
minor
some
white grape,
Blanc, I think.
Exactly, minor white grape varieties, and you know they didn't have a tech sheet, so it's hard to, you know. And I don't think Mercedes remembered what was in it because she was probably born. Yeah, the kid then. Anyway, so we went back to the tasting room and opened this 1970. What is it? 39-year-old white Rioja. Now it's got to be brown, right?
Right.
No. No, it was a beautiful kind of honey, golden color. The wine was delicious. I'm not going to say it had a lot of primary fruit, but you could tell it was made from fruit.
Right.
And had some honeyed characteristic to it. It still had good acidity.
Had it oxidized at all?
No, not really. No, it was gorgeous. It was lovely. And then we had the red, the 76, and, you know, fresh, young, delicious.
Wow.
Again, a lot of the primary fruit was gone, and you know you were getting into more mature fruit,
right?
More mature aromas of age, but this was an absolutely beautiful wine. And the great thing about Lopez Heredia is they tend to release their wines with a little more age than other producers. They're a little bit, you know, like Vega Sicilia does the same thing up in Ribera del Duero. You know, they hang onto their wines quite a long time. So while you're having you know other Spanish wines that are 7, 8, 9 years old, you're having a you know Vega Sicilia that's 24 years old, and that's the if it's not the current release, it's one of the current releases. You know, it's
right.
So Lopez Heredia is the same way. You go into a restaurant and you see a Lopez Heredia on the wine list, and you'll see something from the 90s, you will see something from the 80s. You know, they have a lot of different wines that are out there, and you can buy them with complete confidence that as long as the wine's been stored properly, that it's going to be good. The integrity of the wine is impeccable, and they just make these wonderful, age-worthy, older Riojas.
Now, what's the price point for her wines? I mean, I've never seen them in the market, so.
You know, it's a wine that I think is more prevalent on the East Coast.
Okay.
And the price points are going to be for the Reservas. Probably in the $40 range.
Oh, that's so reasonable.
Yeah, not
what a
terrible.
Fun and what a fun experience to drink a you know bottle of Reserva.
And that's why you know in New York City, a lot of the Somms like Lopez Heredia, because they can buy a fully mature bottle of wine. It doesn't cost you an arm and a leg,
right?
And it's from a great producer, and the wines are always good. So, and then I think I mentioned, or maybe it was before we went on the air, this other winery, Riojanas, that's over 100 years old, and they're the one that we talked about. This
they're straddling
the fence and doing a very, very good job of it. So, I really enjoyed all of their wines, and I think that I'd love to see them. I think they had one of their lines is called Gran Albina. And the other one is Monte Real.
Okay.
And so one of those is more traditional, and one of those is more modern. And the remarkable thing is, and this has got to be a challenge for a winemaker, is they do both equally well.
How
you know, you would think, okay, the winemaker's going to buy into the old way or he's going to buy into the new
right.
way. They do both, and they do it extremely well.
Is it the same winemaker that's doing both styles?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
great.
Same winemaker. So, and then getting back to the more modern, I mentioned Artadi, which really impressed me. And Artadi's owned by a fellow named Juan Carlos Lopez de la Calle. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is.
And, you asked about the age. This is a winery. It's not 100 and some years old. It was founded in 1985, which, you know, given...
That's very young.
Yeah, it's very young. Very young for the region. And he makes one wine called Viña El Pisón. And El Pisón is this vineyard that he has that is 70 years old or thereabouts. It's 100% Tempranillo. And not to cite another wine critic, but I'm going to cite another wine critic. Recent vintage of his Viña El Pisón got 100 points from Robert Parker.
Now this is
one of those hefty price tag wines. This retails for $300 here in the U.S. But not only is the wine good, it's also pricey because it's very, very rare. The vineyard isn't that big, and only 600 bottles. 100 six-packs are shipped to the United States a year.
Oh.
So who gets those wines? You know, probably restaurants that buy a lot.
Right.
Or, you know, so you got to get on the stick there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a real collector's wine.
Well, you know, oftentimes, you know, with these rare wines, sommeliers refer to as stamp collecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, it's the pursuit of trying to obtain them.
Yeah. And then, you know, but here's the other thing about Artadi. They've got this really spendy, high-end Viña El Pisón, but their regular line of wines retails for about $20 a bottle, and they call that Viñas de Gain. Gain spelled G-A-I-N. And the Viñas de Gain wines are really, really beautiful wines, and they sell for $20 a bottle. I mean, not too shabby at all. And I enjoyed them, and I had several different vintages. And then they have a white wine. It's 100% Viura,
uh-huh.
And it's barrel fermented. And
oh.
I have to tell you, this is one of the best Viuras I ever tasted. Because Viura is not a grape that's known for its complexity
its
power. And it's just kind of a light quaffing wine. The Artadi Viura is unbelievable. Really, really good. And then another winery that I found that was very impressive in the modern style. This is a winery that is built into the side of a hill, and it's all gravity flow. So it's it's on about four levels,
okay.
And you go down each level, and they don't have any pumps. You know, and the reason for that is that you know they're gentle to
right.
the wine, right?
Right.
Everything is gravity flow, and it's called Baigorri. And Baigorri is spelled Baigorri. And their Crianza retails for about $25. Very, very nice wine. Their Reserva is in the $40 price range. And this is a good wine. I gave it 90 points. And then they do a wine they call Vino de Garage. Vino de Garage. And terrific wine. And that's a high expression wine, what we call the high expression wine. And that retails for about $65. And then they also have a white wine that's a Viura, and it's they call it Blanco Fermentado.
Oh,
Blanco
okay.
Fermentado. So there you go. And then last but not least, in an area that's to the east. It's on the eastern edge of the Rioja region, and it's the one part of Rioja that has influence from the Mediterranean climate.
Okay.
The rest of Rioja is influenced by the Atlantic, which is a colder climate.
Okay.
So you get higher acid, you get lower alcohols,
mm-hmm.
and
ageability,
a little ageability, and a little more you know, it's just cooler there, and so you get more acid in the wines, and they're a little bit leaner, and that's considered the best area of Rioja.
Right.
Now, this other winery, Baron de Lay, has made quite a reputation for itself with really good wines from Rioja Baja.
Okay.
And again, you know, a little higher alcohol, riper fruit, a little more plush on the palate.
Mm-hmm.
And they also pioneered a concept that was not prevalent in Rioja, but it's becoming more in fashion, let's say that. And that is that it's set up like a French chateau. So it's all estate grapes. And the vineyards are all around the winery. The pattern in Rioja for years has been for these bodegas to not own a lot of vineyards,
mm-hmm.
to work with a lot of growers. And then, you know, in a good vintage, they would buy more fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And in a bad vintage, the growers would not make as much money because the wineries weren't in the market. You
right.
know? So, and you didn't have a lot of control over your raw product. You
right.
know, you were really kind of at the mercy of a good vintage or a bad vintage. And
mm-hmm.
so the good producers like Montesillo is one of my favorites, and they're very traditional. They only buy grapes in good vintages.
Right.
And so they'll go years where they don't make any wine at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't own any vineyards, so they're not out anything.
Right.
You know, and that's owned by the Osborne people. But anyway, this Baron de Lay is in a Rioja Baja, and they use a lot of new oak. So you're going to, if you have a Baron de Lay Crianza or Reserva, these wines are very good. You know, the Reserva, I gave 90 points, and it's a $25 wine. The Grand Reserva, the 01 vintage that I tasted, I gave 93 points, and it's a $40 wine. So these are really delicious wines at what I consider not too bad. You know, the prices aren't too bad.
Well, and as we've been talking, you know, when we look at wines that are fun to experiment with, where they're mm-hmm. not going to break the bank, Spain is such a great country to go to, and in particular Rioja, where the quality level is so high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really difficult to find a bad bottle of Spanish red.
Baron de Lay also has another little twist, and that is they have some Cabernet Sauvignon planted.
Oh,
and that's
yes.
Cabernet. This is really interesting because Cabernet Sauvignon isn't technically legal
right.
in Rioja, but it is legal. I mean, it's a weird interpretation of law or grape law or
right.
whatever. You can't put it on the label. So on the label, they can't say that this has Cabernet,
right.
but there was some experimentation in that area with Cabernet. It's all grandfathered in. So for their Cabernet, they put that into a blend called Finca Monasterio. And that's a $50 wine
uh-huh.
and a lot of oak. I think when I wrote about it, I said a luxuriously oaked Tempranillo Cab Sauvignon blend. And very good wine. I gave that one 91 points. Mm-hmm. I probably... A lot of people would give it a little higher rating. I mean,
right.
91's not bad. I prefer wines that don't have as much oak,
right.
but it had the fruit to support it. So, you know, it's well made for what it is, and it's a nice wine. But I think if you put their Reserva in front of me and their or the Grand Reserva and the Finca Monasterio, I'd probably gravitate toward the Grand Reserva. Or let's just say you have them both at dinner.
Right.
You look at which bottle is empty at the end of the night, I would
right.
probably have drained the Grand Reserva.
Well, and you know, too, I mean, Tempranillo, when you're talking about food wines, you know, it's a great foil to pair with food. So it's something a little unlike Cabernet, where it's a little bit more limiting to mm-hmm. what you can pair with it.
So, you know, I did have an interesting trip over there. I tasted a lot of very good wines. You know, it was eye-opening in the sense that I saw side-by-side comparisons between the modern and the traditional. And my curiosity now is their message getting through? Do you see more interest at your level
Absolutely.
In Spanish wines? And are you yourself more interested in mm-hmm. Spanish wines? And not just the Xixi Priorato
yeah,
wines.
Right, right.
But, I mean, Rioja is the traditional Spanish wine.
Right.
I mean, we knew Rioja before we knew anything else from Spain.
Well, you know, what we're seeing, you know, first of all, to just address what's going on, really, I think in the industry, and we all talk about the economy, but there's some really great upsides to this economy. And they're driving the consumer to go beyond looking at, you know, Napa Valley Cab. Mm-hmm. They're really looking for some exciting wines that are values. But
yeah, that you don't have to spend $100 to get a good bottle.
But they don't
of wine.
Feel like values when yeah. you drink them. They're better than what their price might indicate.
Right.
And, you know, Spain is a natural country to go to. The other thing, too, is people like Jorge Adonias. I mean, there's some really, you know, great.
He's an importer for those who don't
absolutely,
know.
Absolutely. Yep. He's a great importer. So all of a sudden, there's a lot more availability to these wines. When we look at people like you mentioned, Robert Parker, all of a sudden, a lot of these wines are garnering some high scores. And then, you know, on more the collector side, you're seeing a lot more interest. Mm-hmm. And two, the general global availability of wines is really opening up. So yes, there is definitely interest in the consumer. You know, for me, in terms of studying wine regions, you know, Priorat's exciting because it's, you know, literally in the old world, it's cowboy country. It's anything mm-hmm. goes, and it's a land of great, great excitement. But in terms of studying, you know, you don't, in the world of wine, you don't want to lose the individuality of the regions. You know, and when you look at some of these New World wine producers, you know, what makes it different than any other wine that's produced? You know, yeah. you lose some of the specialness of that region. So drinking old world Riojas or the older style really, for me, is what keeps that identity of Rioja. I like the nuances. I like the subtle mineralities. I don't.
And the history.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you drink a bottle of wine like that, you're really appreciating the history that, you know, these family winemakers that have been in, you know, been in existence for 150 years. You know, these were things that were handed down generation after generation, whereas a lot of this new world winemaking is really relying more on technology and things that are of the moment. And when you taste a new world style wine, it kind of tastes like a new world style wine from Australia mm-hmm. or from California or Washington or, you know, a new world style wine from France. You know, they all have a lot of similarities, whereas when you look at these places that are maintaining their old world standards.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I've spent quite a bit of time in Spain in the last year. And one of the things I'm finding is it reminds me a little bit of Italy in the sense that no matter where you go, you find out they make wine there. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know about it.
Right. So
Toro suddenly magically appears on the scene, but Toro's been around forever. And when I was at Artadi, he also has a winery down in Valencia. Mm-hmm. And poured a couple of the bottlings, and there was a really nice Syrah and some, you know, good wines from an area that you would think, okay, it's a little too warm down there. No, it's a little elevation, and they get freshness in the fruit, and the wines were well balanced and delicious. And Cigales makes good wine. Mm-hmm. In November, I was in Navarra, and Navarra had historically been known for you know, light reds and rosés, and Navarro has really started to turn its wine industry around, and they're making more interesting wines these days. And also, they're getting rid of Viura. It used to be their number one white grape in terms of production. Now Chardonnay is their top grape. And, you know, you have to think about it. It kind of makes sense. You know, it's not that far from France.
I mean, literally,
less than an hour, some of those vineyards, you go through the Pyrenees and you're in France. And they have some elevation, so they have cool nights. And Chardonnay does very well there. I tasted some beautiful Chardonnays when I was in Navarra back in the fall of last year. And then, of course, you know, we mentioned Albariño earlier. Albariño has sort of taken the world by storm. It's like Grüner Veltliner. You know, it's just one of those wines that if you're running a wine bar, you know, and you're going to have interesting, crisp white wines. You're going to have a Grüner, and you're going to have an Albariño.
Well, and, you know, Albariño is so great because it's so expressive in the nose. It has so much to offer. But yet on the palate, it's not weighty. It has great acidity. It's
good minerality.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's not pervasive. You know, some of those, for example, Italian whites can be so minerally that if you don't like that.
Don't be knocking my Italian ones.
No.
I love them. Greco.
Absolutely.
But you're right. From Campania, some of those can be really minerally.
Right. But if you're not used to that, like that in your more used to the fruit forward styles of wine, that can be a little shocking on your palate.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So, you know, Albarino kind of gives you, it's like the best of all packages. It gives you acidity, it gives you a little bit of minerality, gives you a great fragrant nose, gives you some fruit. It's not too heavy. It's not too big. You know, Viognier can be really heavy on the palate. This is a little bit lighter. So
do you think, though, that an industry like a wine industry like Spain's is held back a little bit by the fact that Spanish cuisine, as good as it is,
right,
is not even remotely the dominant cuisine around the world, even though half the world speaks Spanish.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
But, you know, Italian wines have this great head start on everybody.
Right.
Because there are Italian restaurants. You wait until China starts making a lot of wine.
Oh, they already are.
Chinese restaurants are everywhere.
Right. Well, and, you know, too, when you look at, you know, France, for example, or Italy, you know, the styles of cuisine, they have multiple levels. Whereas when people think about Spanish cuisine, they think of tapas, they think of paella. But, mm-hmm, you know, it's not really that high level of cuisine that you can see in either France or Italy.
I got a confession for you. As many times as I've been to Spain,
uh-huh,
I have never had paella in
Spain. Oh, oh. Now, when I was in Spain, I lived with a family from Catalonia, and uh-huh, she made paella from scratch for us one time.
Uh-huh.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing dish, but in the United States, the beauty of those wines from Spain is that they match all levels of cuisine, and they're really fun to pair with Italian cuisine or
Spanish. Well, one of the things that I have always liked about Rioja is, you know, Rioja is a very smooth wine. And as it ages and the tannins recede, it takes on this silky texture, mm-hmm, almost like Burgundy.
Right.
And it goes remarkably well with seafood because, mm-hmm, all over Spain, they eat a lot of seafood. Things out of the ocean, and you would never think, you know, oh, I'm going to have a red wine with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you go into the tapas bar and you get a glass of crianza,
yeah,
and you pick up, something with a sardine and a toothpick through it.
Right.
And you put it in your mouth and you wash it down with a red wine. And it's delicious.
And again, there's a reason for that. You know, with red wine and fish, for example, and seafood, you have to be really careful about that tannin level,
mm-hmm,
because that tannin level is what makes it taste very fishy.
Sure.
So with those crianzas, I've spent less time in barrel. They're really, you know, they've got some generous fruit to them.
They're fleshy,
high,
yeah.
And they're high acid, you know, higher, yeah, acid wine. So yeah, it makes total sense that they're going to go very well together. And that's the fun part, too, about Spain is that, you know, the wines match what they eat. So,
mm-hmm, yeah.
It's an exciting, it's an exciting place.
It is. But, you know, everywhere I go in the world, I get excited about what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I love Italy and, you know, I like South America. I mean, you know, someday we'll talk about Argentine Malbecs, because that's really where some of the great value is today.
Oh, well, and, you know, and it's changing. Argentina's changing at a rapid pace where, you know, all of a sudden we have subregions and different levels of wine.
My favorite Argentine Malbec is not too cheap. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
That's the Acheval Ferrer.
Oh, yeah. That's not an inexpensive bottle of wine.
Yeah. And made by my friend from Italy, from Montalcino, actually, Roberto Cipresso.
Oh, I just like to say that name, huh?
Yeah. Well, he's a good guy. You know, the first time I met Roberto, he drove up on his motorcycle. You know, and got off and said, okay, let's go taste wine.
You know, it's such a fun business world.
And then, a couple of years later, I was wandering around Mendoza, and I had tasted this Acheval Ferrer at a wine bar in Buenos Aires and didn't know anything about it. It was a brand new winery. I think it was the first vintage. And I just happened to stumble across their warehouse in Mendoza. And went in, and I'm talking to the owner, and he's pouring the wine. And so, who's your winemaker? And he says, Roberto Cipresso. He's Italian. I said, you're kidding me. So, you know, it's a small world.
It is a small world.
Anyway, that pretty much wraps up what I had to say about Rioja. You can go to whitleyonwine.com and read my columns that I wrote for the Creator Syndicate on the modern Rioja and the traditional Rioja. And I reviewed a number of wines. You know, I gave them scores. I didn't give a lot of detail, but I recommended wines and said gave my my point evaluation and listed the price. And the prices are always the nationally suggested retails, and that's always the highest price you'll find. You know, you could go to a lot of good wine shops, and they buy smart. And so you can beat those nationally suggested retail prices if you shop around.
Are any of the producers that you reviewed, are any of those available retail in San Diego?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You can find Rota.
Okay, great.
I know you can find Cune.
Okay.
But, you know, Spanish wines are hard because not everybody stocks them, and they don't reserve, they don't carve out a big space. And the wine merchants don't carve out a big space for Spanish wines, so that they can only carry a handful of things.
Right, right, right.
You know, you'll see France has a bigger space, but France doesn't have nearly the space that it did 25 years ago.
Ah, interesting.
You know, because there's so many more California wines, and we now have competition from, you know, New Zealand, Australia, Chile,
Argentina.
And so it's precious getting that space in a wine merchant's small store.
Interesting.
So, anyway, well, thank you for joining me this week and listening to my tales of traveling through Rioja and tasting wines and just my sort of general impressions.
Oh, believe me, it was my pleasure.
So that's all we have time for this week. This is Robert Whitley for Whitley on Wine. And
this is Lisa Redwine for Whitley on Wine.
And until next week, ciao.